What we're going to look at is talk about being men and leading, but addressing one of the big problems of Jacob, and that was being a passive leader, being someone who was not connected emotionally with his family. And one of the things that we see a lot of, and although I'm not going to address this tonight, I'm going to give you a little bit of this is, I'm using some of this material to process through a concept called father woundedness. And it's interesting, the number of men and women I talk to who are still struggling with or working through some of the injuries that often were unintentional but yet occurred because of a passive or a unavailable father. And I come across more and more, and really both men and women, who just don't know how to connect emotionally and spiritually with one another. And so a lot of times we think we're, being, intimate and close at those, at a spiritual, emotional level, when in fact we're not. And we're going to see tonight, Jacob. Jacob really is a great example of what not to do. And so we'll learn a little bit more about his life, but also understanding how it can be recovered. And so it's not a death sentence, but it's all recoverable. So let's have, if my readers will come on up. And we have the microphone here. Power is on. Mic is on. And we have David's going to read first. Then we have followed by Scott, Matt, Richard, and then Alika. So, David, here we go.
Soon after this, Joseph's brothers went to pasture their father's flock at Shechem. When they had been gone for some time, Jacob said to Joseph, "Your brothers are pasturing the sheep at Shechem. Get ready, and I will send you to them." "I'm ready to go," Joseph replied. "Go and see how your brothers and the flocks are getting along," Jacob said. Then come back and bring me a report." So Jacob went on his way, and Joseph traveled to Shechem from their home in the valley of Hebron. When he arrived there, a man from the area noticed him wandering around the countryside. "What are you looking for?" he asked. "I'm looking for my brothers," Joseph replied. "Do you know where they are pasturing their sheep?" "Yes," the man told him. "They have moved on from here. I heard them say, 'Let's go to Dothan.'" So Joseph followed his brothers to Dothan and found them there.
When Joseph's brothers saw him coming, they recognized him in the distance. As he approached, they made plans to kill him. "Here comes the dreamer," they said. "Come on, let's kill him and throw him into one of these cisterns. We can tell our father a wild animal has eaten him. Then we'll see what becomes of his dreams." But when Reuben heard of this scheme, he came to Joseph's rescue. "Let's not kill him," he said. "Why should we shed any blood? Let's just throw him into an empty cistern here in the wilderness. Then he'll die without our laying a hand on him." Reuben was secretly planning to rescue Joseph and return him to his father. So when Joseph arrived, his brothers ripped off the beautiful robe he was wearing. Then they grabbed him and threw him into the cistern.
Now the cistern was empty. There was no water in it. Then, just as they were sitting down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of camels in the distance coming toward them. It was a group of Ishmaelite traders taking a load of gum, balm, and aromatic resin from Gilead down to Egypt. Judah said to his brothers, "What will we gain by killing our brother? His blood will just give us a guilty conscience. Instead of hurting him, let's sell him to those Ishmaelite traders. After all, he is our brother, our own flesh and blood."
So when the Ishmaelites, who were Midianite traders, came by, Joseph's brothers pulled him out of the cistern and sold him to them for 20 pieces of silver. And the traders took him to Egypt. Sometime later, Reuben returned to get Joseph out of the cistern. When he discovered that Joseph was missing, he tore his clothes in grief. Then he went back to his brothers and lamented, "The boy is gone. What will I do now?"
Then the brothers killed a young goat and dipped Joseph's robe in its blood. They sent the beautiful robe to their father with a message, "Look at what we found. "Doesn't this robe belong to your son?" Their father recognized it immediately. "Yes," he said. "It is my son's robe. A wild animal must have eaten him. Joseph has clearly been torn to pieces." Then Jacob tore his clothes and dressed himself in burlap. He mourned deeply for his son for a long time. His family all tried to comfort him, but he refused to be comforted. "I will go to my grave mourning for my son," he would say, and then he would weep. Meanwhile, the Midianite traders arrived in Egypt, where they sold Joseph to Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, the king of Egypt. Potiphar was captain of the palace guard.
All right, give him a round of applause. Excellent job. Good job, guys. All right, very good. Wow, good reading. I like that. So, what an amazing event that takes place. When you and I think about the issues that are in front of us, one of the things that we need to perhaps understand is a rather basic relational principle that's important. As men who lead wherever we are, especially I'm thinking of our families and in our homes, one of the things we want to lose is our self-focus and become other-focused. Which means we seek to understand rather than be understood. See, one of the paradigm shifts is many of us address our relationships with our families and our mates wanting to be understood. We feel misunderstood. Rather than working at understanding our mates and our families. And what's required in understanding versus being understood is less talking and more listening. And so that forces the shift in how we approach, because if you take on the message and the principle, I want to understand rather than be understood, that means you're going to listen more than talk. And generally speaking, in our culture, because of our training and how we were raised, especially from boys to men, although both men and women have this struggle, men tend to have more of a struggle, perhaps, than others. This is not necessarily a genetic problem. I've heard a lot of people suggest, well, this is kind of a male issue. Well, both men and women have these kinds of things, and there's probably more about personality and different the types of personality that we have, as well as the culture that we were raised. It tends to, I want to blow up the myth that somehow men cannot connect emotionally or somehow cannot express themselves emotionally. Because that just is not true. Now, you may not feel comfortable in doing it. You may lack training and skill in doing that. But the fact is, everyone in this room is more than capable of connecting and becoming more emotionally available. Probably the biggest problem we're facing is fear. We're afraid. We're afraid to do these things. And we've taken on a passive nature when it comes to emotions, because we probably have some bad memories when it comes to, or bad experiences when it comes to our emotions. I think the other thing that happens is we lack self-awareness. So not only do we need to learn to have other focus rather than self-focus, we also need to learn to be self-aware, know what's going on with us. One of the things that I see happening, and unfortunately a lot of us don't have this, everyone in this room would benefit by having a mirror in front of you when you're talking. So, well, you're all there by yourself. That's terrible. Yeah, why don't you get them? Yeah. You don't have to sit there by yourself. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So, the idea here is what would happen if we had a mirror in front of us as we were talking and expressing ourselves? What do you think would happen? Besides, you'd have to look at yourself. It would change everything. See, a lot of times we don't see ourselves in how we are interacting, and because of that, we end up not understanding what's really going on. The other thing I think would be an amazing experience is we could videotape you while you're interacting with the people around you. Could you imagine if we could videotape your interaction with your family as you're talking to your wife, as you're talking to your kids, as you're interacting with the world around you? If we could videotape your experience, I bet there'd be some life-changing moments that would take place. Can you say amen to that? See, I know for a fact that that's what will happen. I have literally hundreds of hours of videotape of couples who have argued in front of the camera, real couples, and a lot of times they'll struggle with, you know, what's going on. I'll say, well, wait a second. Let me show you a videotape of your interaction. I remember one couple just could not believe their interaction was, I'll frame it this way, as bad as I was indicating. I said, well, that's okay. Let's show you a videotape. And I got a 6-foot TV, and I put it in front of them and had them sit there about 10 feet away, and I played the tape. That was one of the most amazing moments in that couple's life. Everything changed from there out. Because I can still remember their reaction, and she was saying, I can't believe that's me. That's not me. I said, no, that's you. That is you. And so this idea of self-awareness becomes, and I've often thought, what would happen if you and I would take time to get a little more help when it comes to expressing ourselves emotionally and spiritually? We will get some coaching. Jacob could have used some of that. Jacob, Joseph's father, struggled with his emotions, understanding and being sensitive to others. If you look at your sheet there, he's a very successful businessman. It tells us in Genesis 30:43, thus the man became exceedingly prosperous. And I did a little bit of a calculation that came out of Genesis 32 for you, just kind of figuring out. So I wonder how much of this guy probably had at least 4,400 different kinds of animals on his ranch. And can you imagine a ranch with over almost 4,500 animals contained in that area? And that was his responsibility. Jacob was very concerned about his son's integrity. So because of that, and here's the thing I want you to know. Rather than dad going to his sons, what did he do? He sent Joseph to go chase after his brothers and check on them. Now, we know that there was reasons for doing this. We don't know exactly what was going on, but that again shows us that dad was unwilling to get involved, and so instead he sent out his youngest 17-year-old son out to check on his older brothers. Now, we know that there was a lot of things going on. There's a lot of stuff, and I want to give you some background here again of some of the things. For example, we know that Jacob had 12 sons and one daughter. And to give you an example of some of the, and I want you to begin to see some of the things that are happening. If you were to look at chapter 34, you would learn about the daughter, Dinah, who got herself in trouble, decided that she'd go out and visit and go, you know, look at the people of the land. And scripture tells us that she unfortunately became sexually involved with Shechem. Shechem is the son of one of the kings in that area of the tribes, the Hivite tribes. And it turns out that we would call Shechem's interaction with Dinah a date rape. And that's what he did, basically, is he raped her and assaulted her against her will. Now, we learn later, though, I guess he did fall in love with her or decided that she ought to be his wife. And we learn that they then tried to entice dad, Jacob, into selling the land so that they could get married. Okay, so let's pick it up. Look with me there. I'm giving you a scripture, Genesis 34, 8 through 12. Hamor spoke to Jacob and his sons, my son Shechem is head over heels in love with your daughter. Give her to him as a wife. Intermarry with us. Right? So let's walk away from this Judaism stuff. Give your daughters to us and we'll give our daughters to you. Live together with us as one family. Settle down among us and make yourselves at home. Prosper with us. Shechem then spoke for himself, addressing Dinah's father and brothers. Please say yes. I'll pay anything. Set the bridal price as high as you will. The sky's the limit. Only give me this girl for my wife. Now realizing he's already violated her. And now they're trying to hide the violation. What I find interesting is in Scripture here, dad had a passive response. We hear that Jacob had heard that his daughter had been raped. What did he do? Nothing. He just became, if you will, passive. It was his sons who decided to do something. And when they became, if you will, emotionally enraged in Genesis 34:7, meanwhile, Jacob's sons on their way back from the field heard what had happened. They were outraged, explosive with anger. Shechem's rape of Jacob's daughter was intolerable in Israel and not to be put up with. Why didn't Dad say that? Why wasn't Jacob? Why don't we read about his anger and his disgust rather than his sons? Now, we know that the sons decided that they would get Shechem. And so they decided to deceive the men and said, you know, based on this this interesting proposal we read from the message in verses 8 through 12, well, maybe we could, but before we consent to the marriage, here's what we want you to do. We want you to consent to being circumcised. And if you'll go ahead and go through the rite of circumcision, then we'll go ahead and consent to our sister getting married to Shechem. Matter of fact, it says in Genesis 34:25, 3 days after the circumcision, while all the men were still very sore, what a great military strategy. Two of Jacob's sons, Simeon and Levi, Dinah's brothers, each with a sword in his hand, walked in the city as if they owned the place and murdered every man there. Why wasn't Dad there? Where was Dad in all this? Jacob again, I want you to see him. He's passive, he's self-absorbed, and I'm not even sure I hear him. I read through scriptures going through it. Where's his concern for his daughter? I mean, she was violated and assaulted. So in 34, we see his response, chapter 34, verse 30. Jacob said to Simeon and Levi, "You've made my name stink to high heaven among the people here, these Canaanites and Perizzites. If they decide to gang up on us and attack, as few as we are, we wouldn't stand a chance. They'd wipe me and my people right off the mat." They said, "No one's going to treat our sister like a whore and get by with it." Now, why don't you go back and look at that? "You've made my name, and they're going to gang up on us." And he goes on, he says, "They'll wipe me out, my people, me, my, me." Everything's about Jacob. Where is it about the daughter? Where is it about his sons? I mean, other than just being angry. You know, often one of the two emotions a lot of men and women have is the emotion of, well, nothing, neutrality, and second emotion, anger. I hear that a lot. Well, so what kind of emotions are in the home? Well, it's usually just kind of neutral, or it's angry. Well, the Lord obviously used this event to get Jacob and his family's attention, which God, again, remember we talked about this morning, he'll use crisis to get our attention, and he does here. And in chapter 35, it goes on, and Jacob finally realizes we got to get out of town. So he told everyone in his household, get rid of your pagan idols, purify themselves, and put on clean clothes. We're now going to Bethel, where I will build an altar to God who answered my prayers when I was in distress. And he had been with me wherever I've gone. So they give Jacob all their pagan idols and earrings. He buried them under the great tree near Shechem as they set out, and a terror from God spread over the people in all the towns of the area so that no one attacked Jacob's family. So there you go. I mean, it's kind of like God protects them, but still, we hear a lot about me, my stuff, and it's still, the focus is on Jacob and not on his family. I want you to see that. So, now it gets worse, right? The plot thickens. Back to Genesis 37. Joseph's brothers saw him coming. They recognized him in the distance, and as he approached, they made plans to kill him. "Here comes the dreamer," they said. "Come on, let's kill him." Now, I want you to understand, how is it everything got so messy? Well, I'm showing you. Because Jacob, Dad, wasn't involved. I mean, he just kind of let everything just kind of stew out there with his family. And what you're seeing is just that distant, emotional kind of thing going on, the passivity of a dad, and he's so concerned about his flocks and his business and doing all this stuff that everyone of his family is just kind of hanging out there. And now they're all pretty resentful and bitter and upset. So here comes their little brother wearing the cool coat, the one who had the dreams, right? The two dreams. That's why they say, here comes the dreamer. Come on, let's kill him. We'll throw him in one of these cisterns, and we can tell our dad a wild animal has eaten him. What's Joseph doing? He's following his dad's orders. Go out and check out on your brothers. I'm sure everything will be fine. I have no idea what's going on, but go ahead and check on them because they'll certainly, he's sending them into the lion's den, literally, and he's got a family here that's blowing up around him, and he doesn't realize, man, how could he miss the fact that his sons wanted to kill one of their brothers? I mean, let me tell you, that's a very powerful, resentful, bitter kind of emotion going on. On top of the fact he's wearing his robe, remember? What that robe stands for. I'm the favorite son. I'm special. Now, we see that Reuben, right? Reuben was the oldest son. He was the one that had the right of firstborn. Remember, Joseph is wearing the coat that was basically saying, I'm going to get the right of firstborn. And so right there would have been an interesting contention. Now, we see Reuben had heard of their scheme. He came to Joseph's rescue. Right? Genesis 37, verse 21. Let's not kill him. You know, why should we shed any blood? Let's figure another way out. So let's just throw him in an empty cistern here in the wilderness, and he'll die. We don't have to lay a hand on him. I mean, we're not going to kill him, right? Well, they're still killing him. I mean, throwing him into a well, basically in a hole in the ground, leaving there to die, is them killing him. But he doesn't want blood on his hands, right? So we're really, I mean, Reuben. Now, it says here Reuben was secretly planning to rescue Joseph and return him to his father. Well, okay, we're going to come back to Reuben here in a second. Reuben's got some serious problems, okay? And I want you again to see what's happening here. So Joseph arrived. They tore off his robe. They threw him in a cistern. Joseph was in shock. We don't get the sense of this. If you read later on in Genesis 42, if you go there, we know Joseph was like, man, he was in shock. He was emotional. He was in distress. I mean, don't think he just threw in there and was quiet. He was like, wow. He was terrorized by this. This was an experience he would never forget. Verse 25, then just as they were sitting down to eat, they looked up and saw a caravan of camels, right, coming towards them. And the group of Ishmaelite traders, they were loading some gum, balm, and Aramaic raisin to Gilead and into Egypt. Well, you know, why should we kill our brother? Why don't we just basically get rid of him instead of hurting him? We'll sell him. I mean, you know, this would be a great idea. And they all agreed. So let's sell him to these groups of traders, and this way we can get rid of him. Now, Reuben wasn't there to voice his approval or disapproval. Of course, we learned that he returned. He was shocked about what happened. And he, you know, his brothers convinced him that this was the best way to go, so Reuben went along with it. I thought, Reuben, man, you are so deceitful. You know anything about Reuben, the oldest brother? This guy was a bad guy. Before you think he was being noble trying to rescue his younger brother, you got to go back to Genesis 35. And it tells us that while he was lying there, Reuben had intercourse with Bilhah, his father's concubine. And Jacob soon heard about it. So the oldest son went and had sex with one of his father's wives. That's really a bad thing. And that was obviously a huge violation. So basically what you have is Reuben engaging having sexual intercourse with the mother of his two brothers, Dan and Naphtali. I mean, how crazy and unhealthy is that, right? Now, you would think Jacob would be furious. I mean, how dare you violate? This is my wife. And, you know, this is the mother of two of your brothers. I want you to understand, we read nothing of Jacob's reaction. He once again is passive. Here's what we read, two words. Basically, he heard it and dropped it. Now, we know he didn't totally drop it, because here's how we know he knew what happened. You jump ahead to Genesis 49. Here is Dad talking about Reuben. Reuben, you're my firstborn, my strength, the child of my vigorous youth. You are first in rank, first in power, right? The firstborn. but you are as unruly as a flood, and you will be first no longer, for you went to bed with my wife. He knew what went on all the time. But did he ever say or do anything about it? No, he didn't. He didn't like conflict, didn't want conflict. He was passive. He just heard of it. And once again, we see this, I mean, look what's going on. Because of his passivity, because of the distance emotion, because of his unavailability, look at all the stuff stirring around and going on. So the older brothers go ahead and they follow through on their plan. And they did exactly, and again in Genesis 37, 31 through 35, they did exactly what they planned to do. They slaughtered the goat, dipped the robe, went back to the father, and basically said, yep, your son's dead. And of course, now we read of how he mourned deeply. What would have happened differently if Jacob knew his sons? What would have happened if he sat down and said, come on, boys, let's get together. We need to talk. What's going on with you guys? What would happen if he had a weekly family meeting and, you know, barbecued a lamb or something, you know, and got together and said, let's talk. Let's have devotions together. Let's process through. And we just lost, you know, Rachel, the love of my life, and, you know, all these crazy things are going on. We're living in this crazy land. Man, we need to get together and talk and some kind of interaction going on. What would have happened if he wasn't so passive and distant emotionally? See, Jacob is going to, and his family is going to reap what is being sown. Because this is what happens. And I want you to know that what we're getting here is just really a crazy word picture of what can happen when we make a decision to be passive and unavailable emotionally to our family and spiritually. You're called to be leaders in your family. It's time you lead. And standing back and letting someone else do it is wrong. We got to step up, because if you don't step up, there are consequences that can and may happen, and you may not even be aware. You can be oblivious to it. So here's what we need to learn. Number one, it's really important to seek to understand rather than be understood. Man, let me encourage you. One of the most important things, and I think one of the problems of our culture today, is absentee fathers. And I'm going to be, I hope you understand, in all humility, I want to say this, but I'm a busy guy. I've been busy most of my life. I do lots of stuff. You know, I haven't always just been a pastor. I've been a pastor, teacher, different things, right? Counselor, etc. I raised three boys. Not perfect boys at all. But I want you to know that when they grew up, they had my time. They were my priority. And every week I spent time with one or two of them. And for most of their life, we had dinners together. We made it an intentional discipline that we had at least one meal together most weeks, even in the midst of all the busyness. And I learned a lot of things that I hope were, you know, I was fortunate and I was very close to my parents. Even though they got divorced, still I had a good relationship with them up until probably about 16, 17. So I was very fortunate in that. But, man, I got to tell you, learning to take time, and I think one of the things that I worked hard at is listening to my boys. You know, it's like last night, we went out to dinner, sat down. Of course, now it's my boys, wives, girlfriends, right? We sat down. And I've learned to do something. I said, how's it going? And then I sit back and just listen and not talk. And I'm listening and they're talking and I'm just, it's kind of fun to watch, you know, your children grow up and then they talk about stuff. And then as I'm listening, I might ask a question or two, but I spend more time listening rather than trying to talk or avoid or do small. I mean, I really listen to what's going on. Man, I picked stuff up. One of my sons was going through some stuff. I would not have picked that up if he hadn't listened to the conversation. My other boys, I could tell there were some things happening, and he was a little, the things were going on, we're going to a lot of details. But, you know, so he was sharing, and I picked it up, and we've talked since then. I said, man, let's talk a little bit. He said, man, Dad, I'd love to. need some time with you. And so those are the things that, you know, that's the kind of stuff that you and I can live. And, you know, learning to just spend, if you're a new father, going to be a father, you need to spend time with your kids. In those first 5 years, for all three of my sons, Lois and I were always there. They were not ever left alone. We both work. My wife's a professional. I'm a professional. But we made sure that they had our time. And for those years, I went out every week with one of the boys. And we, even when they were young, we spent lunch together or breakfast or something, and it was father-son time. We've done that most of their life. And I got to tell you, now, it wasn't every single week, but most weeks we did it. And, man, it pays off. There's something about taking time, being available, and taking a concerted effort to do this, because here's what I've learned. Your children need quality and quantity from you. You know, we got this really crazy message from Dr. Spock years and years ago, if you remember him. He was a psychologist who said, you know what, your children need quantity, they need quality time. Just give them quality. That's garbage. And he recounted that later on anyway. What we really need is both. You need quality, and there are just times you need the quantity of time when you just hang out with your kids. There's something that can be absolutely dynamic by actually eating dinner together and not watching television. And engaging them in conversation and how's it, things like that. These are the things that begin to build the relationship. I can only imagine what would happen if Joseph did those things. Learning to listen to your family and not make some mistakes that we see Joseph making. The second principle, we must be careful to not put our children on some performance treadmill as well. Very dangerous. I mean, I see Jacob more concerned about his reputation, about the performance of his boys, because it was all about, you've ruined me, you've made me a stink. I mean, performance, performance, performance. Our children need to understand, the world around us needs to know that for us as leaders, you know, we love them, we care about them, and they don't always have to perform. What a great message to let people around you know what, I'm going to love you and care for you, even if you don't do everything right. But too often there's a message that comes that says, you know, only if you do everything just right by my standards, then otherwise what you're going to get is an angry father, an upset dad, someone who's on you and on you. And before you know it, all your kids feels like, man, what can I do right? I can't do anything right. I talk to adults later on in life who still figure they can't do anything right because they still hear that voice in their head. That, wow, never did anything right. But here's what you have here is a parent who's more concerned about his image than the problems facing his children. So, I got to tell you, having pastor's kids is deadly. PKs are known for getting screwed up, especially in church. I've talked to more PKs who come out not liking church, not loving Jesus because of everything that was put on them because they had to perform. That's just not right. And I could be in other situations. I've seen the same thing in military with military families where there's that performance standard and they all have to act a certain way. And again, almost like, you know, MKs, military kids. Same kind of thing can happen where a performance standard. Let me tell you something, you got to protect your kids from that stuff. One of the things that for my boys, they were allowed to act like boys. That's when they had to learn, you know, they couldn't, like, you know, run around crazy. But the expectation was, this is a pastor's kid, like somehow they're super spiritual and better than, no, they're just normal boys like everybody else. And that's important for them to know that. It's important for our children to understand that they can be children and act what is age appropriate. Let me tell you, one of the things that happens for a lot of us is we treat our children like little adults rather than children. I mean, you might have, I still remember, man, I'm looking at my son, and man, like he's 6 feet tall. He's in seventh grade. I mean, it's like, wow, he looks like a man. He wasn't. He was still a child. The temptation was to treat him inappropriately. And I realized, wait a second, this is still a child growing up. And so beginning to realize that and connect with that becomes so important. Because the third principle, passive fathers can create insecurity, hurt, and anger in their children. Jacob was a classic, passive, emotionally unavailable, distant father. And a lot of things happened because he overlooked what was going on with his sons. And he chose to not get involved a number of times, as I've shown you. I want to encourage you, don't let that stay there. Don't let that happen. Whether it's with your children, your grandchildren, even just interacting with others within the community that we live in. Now, one last thought. We all blow it, and we all make mistakes. And we might reap what we sow, but here is something. Beating yourself up is not the answer. Because here's what I've learned, because I've made mistakes, lots of mistakes. You know, I know what it's like to just go, okay, God, forgive me. I need your forgiveness. There are times when I've gone to my boys and asked them to forgive me and apologize and not own it and not allow self-condemnation to be a part of my life, because here's where it's going to lead, death. And all it is going to make things worse. There's nothing right about a parent punishing themselves and blaming themselves. At some point, children do become adults. They face life. And now they need to be responsible for their own emotions, behaviors, and actions. And here's what I know, is things can get better. If they choose to become responsible, things can get better. So don't beat yourself up if there's something in the background there where you go, wow, didn't go so well.